meals tonight. 1 Samuel 29, 30, and 31. Well, the guys have the handouts. There's two pages. They're not stapled. Be sure you get two pages when you pass them down. Pass them in pairs, if you would. So, two pages to the handout. I apologize for those graphs on there. The graphs in color look pretty good. If I put them in black and white copier, they just didn't come out too good. So, but you can look at them maybe and look like them there. Okay. Three chapters tonight, 29, 30, 31. Chapter 29 is the Philistines and David. Remember we left David in Ziklag, Philistine city, where he'd gone away from Saul. So we'll pick up with him there tonight. And then, David gets, you'll fight the Amalekites or Amalekites. I listened to the text on earbuds while I'm on the treadmill, and the guy pronouncing this pronounced it Amalekites. I grew up with it, Amalekites. So I get it both ways, is what it is. But Amalekites is the way he pronounced it there. So David's going to have a little battle with them and kill a bunch of them tonight, and then Saul's death and his son tonight. So we'll wrap up 1 Samuel tonight. Get ready to start David's reign starting Sunday. Okay, chapter 29. Look at our map. Where we are here. On where to stand. I'm not blocking somebody's view here. All right, we started out in the quarter, mainly in this little Benjamin plateau here, Gibeah, Saul's capital city, Ramah, where Samuel was from. So right in here we started out. And then we had one little chapter went up here to Jabesh Gilead, right after Saul was made king. And that'll come back into play again tonight, as a matter of fact. Then we kind of started spreading out down south when David started running from Saul. Here's the Engedi where the spring is. We saw some pictures of that. Maon and Carmel, where Nabal was from, and got the Abigail, his wife. Ziklag over here in the area, in the Philistine territory where David was hiding from Saul. Of course, this is all mountain range through here. But tonight we're going to get way back up in here to the north. And this is the Jezreel Valley up here. It's actually the city of Jezreel. Mount Gilboa is here. It'll come into play tonight. Endor, we had Saul last time. We saw the witch up there. This is where the battle is going to take place up here between the Israelites and the Philistines, and Saul is going to be killed in chapter 31 tonight up here. So, start out here, branched out down into here, and now we're going way up here to the north part of the land. Okay? All right. A couple of pictures here, and then we'll do a little... Wrong thing. Don't copy y'all. So, the pictures here, and then we'll get into some video a little bit later on about the Jezreel Valley. It's a pretty place. Nothing like when we head down south where David was with all the barren land we had and stuff like that. Different territory totally here at this rich farmland valley up here in the north part, just south of Galilee. Now the picture of it here, it's called Tez Jezreel, These cities, like we'll get Ziklag burned tonight. So these cities get destroyed and rebuilt, through the centuries and through the years here. So they get these little mounds they build up, and when they start digging down, the archaeologists, they go down several layers and find the older city. Well, this is where Jezreel was at one time here. So we'll see some of this territory tonight. Let's put it later on. Okay, let's get the Philistines and David. He's been in Ziklag. Achish, the king of the Philistines, thinks David is on his side when David goes out and does these raids. In the territory of Judah and south of there in the Negev. Thinks he's going out and taking care of his enemies, got him, food, if you will, actually deceiving him. But David's really taking care of enemies of Israel that's going to be taken out of the way for his kingdom later on. So that's where David is at this time. So Israel is camped way up there in Jezreel, where I showed you on the map, way up north. Getting ready to battle with Philistines. Philistines are coming in. We talked about that last time. While they may be coming in, Samuel's dead. Saul's been chasing David, not paying attention to his kingdom. All this stuff. So, The Philistines gather at Aphis, which is right beside it on the map. We'll see a little later on here, get closer to that. So now as they start marching up that coastline over there, going up there, the Philistine commanders start questioning Achish, the king, about David. Why would they be concerned about David marching with them? Well, yeah. Where's he from? He is a Israelite, a Hebrew, and who are they going to go fight against? Saul, which is Israel. So if David really wanted to get on Saul's good side, what might he do? Just kind of turn on the Philistines and attack them, and Saul, hey, this guy's really on my side here now. So these Philistines commanders are all concerned about that, because if David's an Israelite and marching with them to fight the Israelites, you kind of see the problem here. So they just essentially tell Achish, no, David's not going. Well, what does Achish think David's been doing for all this year and 4 months? Fighting his battles for him, right? So he defends him. Well, he's been on my side here, a good ally for a year now. What do you mean you don't want him to go? So we get a little piece here now inserted from last time we looked at 1 Chronicles chapter 12, the first 18 verses. So I'm kind of bringing the rest of that chapter. We're not going to take time to dig through it, but if you look at it, it says all these men coming in and joining David's army here. And from Manasseh, from Judah, some from Benjamin, we talked about some of those last time. So he's getting more and more military type men to come up and join up with him here. So they're getting ready to go up and fight the Philistines. But Achish just, he loses out. These Philistine rulers say, no, David will not go with us. And so Achish has to just let David go back. He can't fight his own generals, we might call them here, commanders. So he tells David, tomorrow morning, first thing, get up and leave and go back home, go back to Ziklag. We don't want you to go battle with us because of what you might turn and do for us. So David does that. They get up early the next morning, and they start back down from up in that Jezreel Valley area, going back down to Ziklag, which is there where they're living now, have been for a year and 4 months. Takes them 3 days to get there. So it's pretty long, a little journey to walk back down through there. And in the meantime, if we go back here one more, so I meant to point this out earlier. Let me get back here one more notch. This is kind of important. Right here. Here's where Amalekites are. So here's Ziklag. Okay? So keep in mind that's where these people here have been from. So let's go back now and catch up. So if they get back down to Ziklag, and what do they find? City's burned to the ground. All the people's gone. Everything's gone. City's destroyed. So, what's the natural reaction to David and all these men with him? They weep. They're hurt big time. I mean, including the ones that's gone are who for David? His two wives, okay? Abigail, one of them, and I know him, the other one. So, they're just totally devastated. When they get back from this battle, well, they'd actually do the battle, but going to battle, come back down, and the city's burned to the ground, and everybody's gone. They don't know whether they're dead or, you know, what, just going here. So, David's men, now keep in mind, we've talked about what kind of men he has. Kind of scoundrel types, some of them. So they get ready to turn and do what? Stone David. Okay? You led us all to this battle up here with these Philistines fighting against our own people. We come back down and somebody done burned our city down, and they get really on David. They're ready to stone David. David is weeping drastically. So that one little phrase we talked about before comes back into play here. What did David do? Inquire of the Lord. And we talked about that. He did for mark some places, then he kind of quit that. Didn't see it in the several chapters. Well, now he comes back. David inquires the Lord, what should I do? Should I go try to find who did this? Should I pursue them? Should I try to rescue anybody that's out there to be rescued? Go get them. And what was the answer? Go get them. You will be successful. So the Lord speaking to David through the ephod that the priest of Arthur had, said, go pursue them, you'll be successful. So David starts. And 600 men go with him. Gets down to this ravine here, and think about that. They marched for 3 days back, right? They found their town totally devastated, burned down, everybody gone. Think about the physical and emotional drain that they got on them now. So 200 men to say, we just can't go. We can't make it across this ravine. We can't keep going. David says, okay, you stay here with our goods, our baggage, whatever we got, and the other 400 go with David. So they go down south trying to find whoever did this to them. Who did they run across? There's an Egyptian down there. No food, no drink for 3 days, famished. So they give him some water, they give him some raisin cakes, they give him some figs, revive him, if you will, get him some strength back, and start talking to him, find out who he is, kind of. So start questioning. So he asks him, why are you out here? How'd you get out here? He says, I am the servant of a Amalekite. And what happened to him? He got sick. Now, back in those days, you got a servant and you've been on a raid and you're traveling back and this Egyptian servant gets sick. What are you going to do with him? Stop him. Leave him. Don't matter. Okay. Just leave him. Go on. I got stuff to do. So he does. He leaves him out there in the desert. And that's how David then finds it. So David says, well, can you tell us who did this? Can you tell us where they are? Can you take us to them? And he said, yeah. He says, I can take you to them. What condition does he ask? Right. Don't take my life. Don't let me be killed. Don't you kill me for what I did in the battle, and don't let my life be taken. So David agreed to this. So they go out. So he finds the Amalekites scattered out in the open. What are they doing? They were a party, okay? All these successful raids they had made, all this booty, this plunder they've gotten, they're enjoying themselves. And so David comes up on them then in this situation. David starts at dusk one day. He starts killing people. What they had done. Once he finished up, like 24 hours later, the way it looks, right? He had a slaughter. How many people got away? Oh yeah, one little group. 400 did what? Got on camels and took off, okay? As far as anybody else left, though, David got them. He wiped them all out. So he has gone down there and kind of ironically, what did he find about the people that their relatives in Ziklag? All of them alive, apparently unhurt, recovered all of them. So they not killed any of them. They got all the women and children back and they were ready to go back then, except these 400 men that young men it said escaped on camels and got away from them. So that's David's revenge, if you will, over and over. Okay, good point. I thought that. Okay. But, all right, let me share that. All right, think about this. Remember back in chapter 15 when Saul was going to wipe out the Amalekites, and didn't do it? He pushed him down to the border. That's why we found him way down south a while ago on the map. And what Mike says that it's a possibility is they need women and children to rebuild their population. Because Saul had killed a bunch of them. He just didn't kill all of them. He brought the king back and some of the best stuff like this. So maybe they didn't kill the women and children because they needed them to start trying to rebuild their nation down there. So possibility to at least think about. Okay. David gets everything that they've taken in Ziklag, plus he got the plunder from from all the other raids they've been doing. So he comes back with all this big load of plunder, all this booty you got here, and the men, as they start going back, what are they saying? Let me give him a praise to David. David's plunder, okay? So he's going back and taking all this stuff back as they're going back toward the men here. And when the 400 of David get back up to where the 200 are at the ravine that couldn't cross it, well, the 400 men start saying, "This is ours. We went to battle. We're going to keep all this stuff. You can have your family back. That's it." David spoke up. What did David say? No, it's fair. They're part of us. Everybody can share alike. And it says that became statue then from then on. Well, if you go back to these two passages on the bottom now, Numbers 31 and Joshua 22, you'll find this has already been stated twice before. That those who stay with the baggage, stay with the goods, stay in the camp, are just to be taken part of those who go out and actually do the raids. So this was actually nothing new, but David had to step in and make it thus. So they all shared together, and they got back. Now, let's back to Ziklag, and he takes some of the plunder that will belong to some of the other cities in Judah. Judah. What's magic about Judah with David? Has he gotten some of these cities in Judah? And he sends it back to him. Now, another thing to think about. When David's been rambling all down through that southern part down there, he needs some help. He needed food for those men. He needed other things like this and stuff from Saul. So he may just be repaying these guys, these towns in Judah, for what they'd done for him. But he gave their part of the plunder back to them and kept the other part there. So that kind of wraps up that one chapter there with David going come down. The things wouldn't take him. They went down, found Ziklag wiped out, went down and found the Amalekites and wiped them out. He got all the people back and got the plunder back and brought it back up. Okay? Anything we left out? No, have it. Yeah, this is not my bounty. This is God did it. God gave these. Who told them to go fight them? When they acquired with the ephod, God said, "Go, you'll be successful." And David's giving God the credit, okay, with this. Yeah, he went back and said, "Yeah, you'll be successful." Well, he inquired of him. Sure did. Okay. Now let's go up north. Gotta leave that part there a minute. Let's go up here to the north part, this Jezreel Valley. We've got two of the mounts to look at here to kind of see where we are. All right, this is Mount Carmel. It sticks out in the Mediterranean Sea. Everybody knows Mount Carmel. Sticks out there. Sea of Galilee up here. Jordan Valley come down through here. This is the Jezreel Valley, kind of an arrowhead-shaped thing. We'll see a little video in a minute more about it. So this is Shunem. We talked about last time, and indoors right up above it up here where David went up there, Saul did to see the witch of Endor. So we zoom in a little bit on it here. Here's Endor, where the witch was. This is the city of Shunem. Here's Jezreel, what the valley's name. That's where they were camped for battle. All right, this is Mount Gilboa. You got to know about Mount Gilboa a minute. So I put some numbers up here to kind of help get the elevation in mind a little bit. Our field down here is actually 592 feet above sea level. I think about 600 feet above sea level. Athens is about right at 800. Okay, 800. Monsanto over there, about 16. And Lookout Mountain up in the corner of the state is about 2,400. Now this elevation that you think about. All right. Now Gilboa here is 1,600 feet. This valley here is, it says 230 feet. So it's a pretty good little hill sticking up here, little mountain, compared to some of these things here. But look at this right here. Beth Shan, which are coming to play in the story, is minus 400 feet. Headed down to that Jordan Valley down there, and this is actually the Jordan River right here. It's 800 feet below sea level. So if you take the 800 feet here, this is about 5 miles across right here. So you're talking about 10 miles across the Mount Gilboa. You go from minus 800 to 1600 feet elevation. So you got a pretty good contrast there. So let's just kind of get some of this stuff in mind. It helps you appreciate the terrain there. Okay. All right. Got a little video we're going to watch here. It's going to talk about this valley here a little bit, get you indoctrinated a little bit more with it. We'll pay about 2 minutes of it. We're going to jump over where it talks about actual Saul's death and the Mount Gilboa and how it plays into there. So we'll watch a little bit, jump over and watch about another 30 seconds over there. Okay, Jeremy.
Shalom, and welcome to the Satellite Bible Atlas, video number 6, map 1-4. The focus of map 1-4 is the Jezreel Valley and Lower Galilee. The general location of the terrain of map 1-4 is situated in the north-central area of the land of Israel. We described in video number 3 how the Jezreel Valley is a wide, flat plain between the central hill country to the south and mountainous Galilee to the north. This makes the Jezreel Valley a hub of international routes that crisscross Israel, a kind of grand central station. Before we take a closer look at the Jezreel Valley and the routes that come in and out of the valley from all directions, let's first see the regions that surround the Jezreel Valley. To the west is Mount Carmel, including the Shephelah, or foothills of Carmel. Northwest is the plain of Asher, which spreads out from the modern seaport city of Haifa on the slope of Mount Carmel to Akko Ptolemais in the north. North of the Jezreel Valley is Lower Galilee, a series of east-to-west running mountain ranges that are bisected by wide plains. Note the town of Nazareth on the mountainous ridge just north of the Jezreel Valley. On the east, note eastern Lower Galilee, and to the southeast, Mount Gilboa. Between eastern Lower Galilee and Mount Gilboa is the wide Harod Valley, which serves as a route to and from the east. Finally, note the Jordan Rift Valley, including the Sea of Galilee and the lower Jordan River Plain. From a high spot on Mount Carmel, let's get a view of the Jezreel Valley from west to east. Note the agricultural productivity of the Jezreel Valley. The name Jezreel means God will plant. Looking across the valley, some 10 to 15 miles away, are the Nazareth Ridge, Mount Tabor, and the Hill of Moreh. Turning just a bit to the south, here's the Hill of Moreh, the Harod Valley, and Mount Gilboa. Now let's take a closer look at the routes and site locations associated with the Jezreel Valley. One Bible geographer called the Jezreel Valley a stage with entry. In Saul's final days, the Philistines encamped at Shunem, near the Hill of Moreh. They were in a position to not only compete for control of the important routes in the Jezreel Valley, but also to drive a wedge between Israelite northern and southern tribes. King Saul gathered his forces at Jezreel, and then snuck around the Philistines to get counsel from a witch at Endor, to no avail. The next day, Saul was wounded, retreated, and died on Mount Gilboa. The Philistines found his body and hung it on the walls of Beth-shan.
All right, chapter 31 now. Saul's death. Wind up Saul. Up on Mount Gilboa up there, there's upper battle. The Philistines are fighting Saul down in the valley there, Jezreel. And then they're pressing hard against them, and the battle's not going their way, and winds up with Saul and all three sons being killed. Both Jonathan, Abinadab, and Michashua, the three sons, are all killed, and Saul is getting away. As he's getting away, the archers find him, and they wound Saul, almost kill him. And so Saul asks his armor bearer to finish him off, because he doesn't want the uncircumcised. He don't want the Philistines to find him and torture him and all this kind of stuff. He asked his armor bearer. Armor bearer wouldn't do it. But you're sitting there, you're going to kill the king? More than likely not. Okay. same respect for him that David did because of who he was. So when the armor bearer wouldn't kill him, what did Saul do? Takes his own sword and kills himself. And then the armor bearer sees that Saul's killed himself and the three sons are dead. So what's the armor bearer do? He kills himself. Okay. And then the Israelites are down in the valley and see what's going on and they flee and run and scatter and the Philistines come in and literally live in the cities. They come in and literally take over. They all run. So they come in and occupy the cities. Now, next day the Philistines go out and they start looking at the bodies and they're trying to take the plunder, okay? Just like David did back from the Amalekites. So they're out there to see what they can get from these dead Israelites. They find Saul and they get his armor, they cut his head off, they take his armor, take it back down to their temples and put it in their temples because this is the armor of the great king of Israel. We won our battle here and do that. Then they take his body and three sons' bodies and they nail them on the wall at Beth Shan, the city we saw over in the right hand, 5 miles from the Galilee. So that's how they treat Saul and his, well, they're victors of battle and they're they can have to nail the bodies up there of the king, right? That's what they did. They won the battle. So, people of Jabesh Gilead. Now, let's talk about it. What had Saul done for the people of Jabesh Gilead way back in chapter 11? They come and rescued them because the Amorites, in this case, were going to come in and punch the right eye out of all the men. Remember that? That's the very first thing. Saul was made king in chapter 10. Very first thing he did when he made king was go up there and rescue the men of Jabesh Gilead. So they have a kind of a debt to pay for Saul, if you will, there. So when they find out what's done, what they've done with Saul's bodies, that and his men, they go by night. They go over to the city of Beth Shan. And they take the bodies down and they burn them and take the bones and give them a proper burial. And they fast then for 7 days. Out of respect for Saul and who he was, the king of Israel, that's been slain in battle. And the Israelites now are totally disarrayed, totally scattered. This thing battle. Okay. Why did Saul die? Let's look at 1 Chronicles chapter 10. Why did God essentially kill Saul in this battle? That's exactly it. Find it, Doug, and read it for us. He names two reasons. Mainly it's a disobedience. First Chronicles 10, 13, and 14. Okay. Sheer disobedience. Why kill it? And he pitches in there the fact that he had gone and consulted the median, which was not the fact he was consulted the median, but he did not consult the Lord. Okay. Because this time, Saul has gotten so far off, we talked about this last time, God wouldn't speak to him, wouldn't tell him anything. Cut him off. So, sheer disobedience. Wow. God killed Saul and took the kingdom and gave it to David, the son of Jesse. Now, one more little point we'll get here before we get into these applications. And we got plenty of time tonight. 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4. Jump over there. I don't know if we get the head just a little bit here. But now this is going to be the news about this battle and what's happened. Ready to read 2 Samuel 4:4 there, if you would. Okay. We even jump like this now is because it ties right back into this news of this battle. Jonathan's son Mephibosheth, and he'll come back into play when we get up to this part up here in 2 Samuel. But the reason he's lame is, when the news came of the battle, Saul's dead, Jonathan's dead, who's next in line? Well, the king. Okay? So, since the Philistines are coming in and taking over, Mephibosheth's next in line for the throne. His nurse grabs him up and runs to go get him in protection. And when she does, she falls with him, and it winds up lame because of it. Okay. So, interject that here because it ties into the results of this battle. Okay. We'll hit again when we don't get over that. Okay. Anything anybody's got? We got some things to look at here. If you don't. Chapter 29, 30 to 31. Comments? Awesome. Anybody? Okay. We talked about in our scriptures looking at for each one of the kings that Saul went from 1 Samuel chapter 10 or so through the end of 1 Samuel. That's it. 2 Samuel pick up. We'll start with David starting, Wednesday night. Well, let's think about some things here. How did David get the mess he was in? David's about to go up here and fight against his own people. You really think about it. He's marching with Achish, the king here. Who's he going to fight against? He's going to fight against the Israelites. Okay. If he went up there to battle with them, like he was going to, he'd been fighting against his own people. So, talked a little bit a couple times ago back about God's providence. I don't know how providence works. I don't understand all of it. But God gave David a way out here. What was that way out? His Philistine commander said, no, he's not going with us. And the king had to give in to him, and David got sent back, which kept David from fighting against his own people. Now, there's a lot of history behind that with Saul chasing him, all this stuff, why am I up there to start with? But here's a way of out of a difficult situation for David. Compromising position. What does God do for us? Let's look at some of these passages. We've got this few minutes. Look at these passages here. Of course, 1 Corinthians 10:13 says God's come to provide a way of escape. He'll give us something that we can bear. And I don't know, I totally understand that package, that verse where it's talking about in general mankind or each individual person and what you can handle. There's some discussion about that. Hebrews 2 verse 18. Somebody find that. I don't know if find it. Hebrews 2 18 to read it. Somebody return these other two up there while he's doing that. Hebrews 2 18, Adam.
For in that,
okay, it's all about Christ. He was tempted, so he can help us when we're tempted. We're in difficult situations. James 1, 2, or 12, somebody got that one? Let it read for me. James 1, 12. Okay, bless the man when he's tempted. When he's proved, when he's survived a temptation, we'll get a crown of life, which God has provided for him. In 2 Peter 2:9.
Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to preserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment.
Okay. We're godly. God knows how to give us a way out of temptation. It's there. We just gotta find it. We gotta take it. Take advantage of it. Now, let's take that point there and tie it with this one. The things that seem to be going horribly wrong, who are we going to turn to? And we kind of get this from the point here of David. David's about to be killed. They're about to stone him to death. David turns to the Lord. He needs help. And we've seen that over and over in the Psalms we've read about David. David needed help. He'd be in a certain situation. And we've looked several times at the first few verses of the Psalm. And the last part would be, you're my refuge, you're my way out. Same type thing here. So let's read the verses there in the writer Peter read up here. Psalms 118, verse 8. Psalms 118, verse 8. Mike, you'll find that one. Yeah. Where's your confidence going to be? Who are you going to trust in? Who's going to give you that way of escape that this guy through talking about? God is. Okay. That's where you put your trust. That's who you turn to when you need help. Proverbs 3, verse 5, very familiar. Same, about the same thing. Ready? You going to read it? Proverbs 3, verse 5. I'll turn to Nahum 1:7. Okay, same concept of what Mike just read. Trust the Lord with all your heart. Don't depend on yourself. Okay, and this other one from Nahum 1:7 is a little bit different. Read it, Rob.
The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knows those who trust in him.
Okay, sounds a lot like one of David's Psalms, doesn't it? The Lord's a stronghold in the time of trouble. Very much like what we read in several Psalms that David has written here. So, we got a problem. Got temptation facing us. Got things falling down all around us. There's a way out. What's that way out? Come to the Lord. Okay. We need these two slides here. If you take this one right there and you put that one with this one. Good preacher gets several sermons out of that, Bob Ray. Now those two slides right there. There's a way out. We'll just find it and take it. Trust in God. When David trusted the Lord, the Lord said, go get them, rescue them, be successful. They went, and that was, Lord, we know the end of that. Yeah. Well, you go get your help. Let your help be good or bad. Now, one more point right quick, and we talked about this a little bit already, but we'll make too much out of this, but think about this with me a minute. Who's fighting this battle with Saul? Jonathan. Being there with Saul fighting. We know about Jonathan and David and their relationship already. What have we seen Jonathan do with his father several times? Stood up to him and defended David several times. Okay? Stood up to him and defended David. Nothing about him being ugly about it. Nothing about him being disrespectful about it. We stood up and said, challenge him. Why are you doing this to David? He doesn't deserve this. Okay? But Jonathan's father is still what? He's king of Israel, okay? But when it comes time to go to battle, he respects him. He goes out there with him. He fights with him. Another lesson, if we think about how we deal with our parents, well, most of us in here, our parents are beyond that, but there are a few young folks in here that still have older parents to deal with and think about, okay? Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah, family, yeah. Hang in with it. Okay. Show him respect for his father. Mike says he's already got his own 5-year-old son at this point. He's not even in Saul's household anymore. He still has respect for him. From what I can gather from this. All right. It's 15 seconds till time for that bell to ring. Dennis is on time. Well, I got a 10-second comment. Made that first mistake. Instead of coming back, what did he do? Yeah, deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper in trouble. Yeah. Okay, we'll get into 2 Samuel. Oh, what's all right? Let's see. Sunday morning. 2 Samuel chapters 1 and 2. 2 Samuel.